So Sefer Melachim this week. Now, Sefer Melachim is divided into two. Our assignment is Melachim Aleph, although according to Chazal, according to the Gemara, as we will see, it's one book. But for us, we're going to focus on just the beginning, or a very important concept in the first book. The book begins where Sefer Shmuel Beis left off. We left off with the end of David HaMelech's life, and so this book begins with Vahamelech David Zakein Babayamim. He's very elderly, and we find the final chapter of his life. And the book concludes in Perek Chaf Beis with the death of Yehoshaphat Melech ben Yehuda. Melech Yehuda, Yehoshaphat ben Asa, and the kingdom of Yisrael of Achaziah ben Achav. So we are bridging a huge chunk of Jewish history, and specifically figures in the Jewish monarchy. That's why it's called Sefer Melachim. The story of this monarchy begins with a unified one under the leadership of David HaMelech. But then, unfortunately, his grandson, Rechavam, has the majority of the kingdom, the majority of the tribes ripped away from him, and we have two kingdoms. We have the kingdom of Yehuda and the kingdom of Yisrael, the northern tribes located in the heart of Shevet Ephraim, the tribe of Yosef, the majority kingdom, the kingdom of Israel, versus the kingdom of Yehuda, which is based in Yerushalayim, with Malchus Beis David. So that's the major story of Sefer Melachim Aleph.
After Shlomo lived.
Very shortly thereafter. So it's Shlomo dies in the end of Perek Yud Aleph. I think in Yud Aleph, let's see. Yes, in the end of Perek Yud Aleph, and then immediately in the beginning of Perek Yud Beis, Rechavam goes to Shechem, and the Melucha falls apart. So what I want to take a stab at today is the overarching theme of this book, that now that you've had a chance to think about it and look at it, and I don't know how in-depth you've studied the Sefer Melachim Aleph before this discussion, but the book is called Kings, and it's all about these kings, both the kings of Yehuda and the kings of Yisrael. But in general, the concept of a Jewish king is confusing. Let's begin in Perek Yud Zayin of Sefer Devarim, where the pasuk describes to us, "Kisavu el haaretz asher Hashem Elokecha nosein lach v'yirishtach v'yashavta bo." You come to the land, you will inherit it, you will sit in it. "Va'amarta," and you will say, "Asima alai melech kechol agoyim asher seviv osai." You will say, "I want to put on myself a king." "Va'amarta," and you'll say that. So when you say that, "Tezvav somtasim alecha melech," and then there are parameters. "Lo suchala seisalecha ish nachri," you can't put a foreign king. "Lo yarba lo susim tezai," shouldn't have too many horses. "Yud zayin," shouldn't have too many wives, and shouldn't have too much money. And then, "Yud ches truchaf," he should write for him a second Sefer Torah. So the Gemara says in Sanhedrin that this is a mitzvah, b'chnisasam la'aretz, when the Jewish people enter into the land of Israel, Lahamad Lahemelech, Lahakra Zar al Shalamalech, and Libnas Ben Beis HaBechira, to establish a Jewish king. So the peculiar aspect of, of this whole story of the Jewish king is, why is it framed in this way? That when you come to the land, Va'amarta, and you'll say, put a king on me. Most mitzvahs are not, when you ask for it, you should do it. It's very strange. Right?
Well, I mean, they're getting the land, so they're feeling like a kingdom.
Great. So what could it have said? It should have said, V'yirishta v'yashavtaba, som tosim alecha melech. Put a king on yourself. This issue has confounded many commentaries. Many mefarshim have struggled with this. It becomes even more apparent, this tension, back in Sefer Shmuel, when the Jewish people ask for a king. And Shmuel is upset at them, right? You spoke about this probably a couple of shiurim ago? No?
We learned it probably a couple years ago.
Okay. So that doesn't go over very well. And the question is, what do you mean? How come it doesn't go over well? It's a mitzvah, lahamid lahamelech, to establish a king. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, they're not disrespecting you, they're disrespecting me. What's going on? Why is there any disrespect at all? So Mefarshim struggle with that. They talk about different options. They asked inappropriately. They asked at the wrong time. They asked with the wrong intention. They asked with the king to have a different role than was intended by the Pasuk. But the truth is, all of those answers, whenever you have many answers to one question, you know what that means?
There's no one.
That's right. Example of that. Why did we go down to Mitzrayim? Well, the Gemara says because of the Angarish al Talmid HaChamim, or the Svasem is because of the Nitzotzo. So this, so many different. So you know what that means? It's a sod. It's a secret. It's hard to understand what the real answer HaKadosh Baruch Hu would give to that question is. So here too, they can't give you a straight answer. Nobody can tell you this is the reason why asking for a king was bad. But the truth is, it's not surprising to me that it was a controversy. Because the whole way that the commandment was formulated in the first place is very unusual. There would not have been a controversy about a mitzvah that is a standard chiyuv, an obligation. There's no controversy when it comes to make the Korban Pesach. And they say, we got to make the Korban Pesach. Shmuel would say, oh, it's a problem. You know, there's historic Pesachs we'll get to in Sefer Melachim. The Torah tells you, you build a house, you put a mezuzah on your door. There's no controversy to say, oh, I should put a mezuzah. Of course, there's not going to be any controversy. But there's controversy in the establishment of a king because the whole institution of the king is controversial. I know it's controversial from the fact that it's born out of the psukim in this very unusual way of the amarta osim alay melech kechol agoyim. So that's the first question that I'm thinking about. Why is there ambivalence in the Chumash? Why is it's not a simple, straightforward, why is it this type of murky issue, the issue of the monarchy? Now, one answer, and if you look at this Nitziv here in Sefer Devarim, in the HaMikdavar, in his commentary, he talks about how, well, different generations and different societies need different kinds of leadership. So that's one answer, possibly, why this mitzvah is couched in such an unusual way. You know, it's possible that the Knesset has an element or a halachic status, perhaps, according to some suggestions, that also has the status of a melech because it's a representative government. But that's only one way of looking at this. I think there's another way that gets to the actual institution of the melech, the monarch, which we could think about when we're studying Sefer Melachim. This is an overview. This is just a general observation about Sefer Melachim. So that's what I want to think about. That's one. Number two is that we could actually come up with an alternate name for this book. We start off by saying, you know why it's called the Book of Kings? Because it tracks the Jewish kings. It starts with King David. It ends with Yehoshaphat. It tracks the split of the monarchy. It names each of the monarchs. It talks about how they behaved, how they acted, how long they lived, how long they ruled. It's a book of Kings. But one could have argued that this is not a book of Kings. You could argue this is not Sefer Melachim. You could have called this Sefer Nevi'im.
How many Nevi'im are mentioned in it?
Quite a few, including some high-profile prophets like Eliyahu, Elisha. Mm-hmm. But it's not just that. What you'll notice as you go through the Sefer is that alongside the king is the prophet. Let me ask it this way. Who wrote this book?
Shmuel was supposed to have written that book.
Well, Shmuel wrote his book, as we will see. Take a look in the Gemara, source 2. Yirmiyah, the prophet Yirmiyahu, Kosaf Sifro, he wrote the book of Yirmiyahu. The Sefer Melachim, the Kinos. Kinos we call Echa. And he wrote the book of Melachim. Yirmiyahu wrote it. And that's interesting because sometimes the Tanakh, there is a reference to what we call Divrei Hayamim. I don't mean the Divrei Hayamim, the book, the canonized book. There were scribes who wrote royal histories. Divrei Hayamim Lamalchus, such and such. Sefer Melachim is not a chronicle written by the monarch. It's not a legacy of the monarchs. It's a book written by a prophet. Who appoints the melech? Says the Rambam, look at source number 3. Ein ma'amidin melech b'tchila. You do not initially install a melech. Ela al pi bezin shel shivim zekenim, 70 elders of the court, ve'al pi navi, and through a prophet. B'Yoshua Sheminehu Moshe Rabbeinu Beistino. Moshe and his rabbinical court, and Moshe was a prophet. The prophet and the Bezdin. U'b'shol v'David Sheminam Shmuel HaRamasi u'Beistino. So the prophet signs off on the king. Now there's a question in the Acharonim. Is that essential or is that just ideal? Today we don't have prophets, so can you have a Jewish king today if you don't have a prophet? That's a question. It's dealt with in the Acharonim. But the idea that the Navi writes the book of the kings is significant. He ordains the king, he writes the book about the king, and he holds the king accountable. Show and tell! Here we have it. A sefer called Mikdash Melech from Avigal Ariel, beautiful sefer, Iyunim B'Sefer Melachim. I have not gone through the majority of the sefer, but some of it I have learned. It's been helpful in preparing this year and thinking in general about the sefer of Melachim. He has an interesting piece in the back where he follows the national treaties, the brisos.
Treaties.
Okay. Covenants,
yeah.
Armistices, agreements, whatever we call them, of the various kings of Israel, and how each one of those was followed by a critique of a prophet. Asa, he made a treaty with this one. Achiav made a treaty with that one. Yehoshaphat, Chizkiyahu, Achaz, he counts them, he goes through them. But he points out that the Nevi'im criticized them. The Nevi'im criticized Achav with his treaty with Tzur, with Tyre. Similarly, the Navi criticizes Chizkiyahu for his treaty with Egypt, that he's leaning on a Mishenes HaRatzutz, on a stick that's very feeble.
Are they always criticizing treaties?
So he describes. He describes why is it that these treaties were so problematic for the Nevi'im, whereas Yitzchak's treaty and Avram's treaty and Yaakov's treaty and Yehoshua's treaty don't seem to give you the same, you know, spiritual indigestion. So he talks about He has different theories. The Isser of Krisis Bris Dafka with the Canaanite nations, potentially the issue of a miscalculated placement of faith. He talks about a lack of emuna, arrogance, others, and the influence on the Jewish social fabric in terms of the community. But the point that I thought was interesting of this is that here you have again this interesting parallel, the story, the narrative of the king and the prophet. And in this case, it's through the prism of treaties, but it's the same point where we're telling the story of the king and we're also telling the story of the prophet. And there is significant interplay between these two throughout the journey of this sefer and the journey of each king. So I want to understand how we think about these. Okay? So far, so good? Obviously, once we think about that, we can reflect on our first issue, which is why there is this ambivalence toward the melech in general. So one key difference between the melech and the navi is the role. What is the role of the melech?
To rule the people.
Okay, so it is a political role. Okay. Notice how the melech, although he has the right, if he's melech from Malchus Beis David, to sit in the Azara in the Beis HaMikdash, he does not have authority over religious life in the Beis HaMikdash. And even though there were many malachim who tried to quash or incarcerate or intimidate prophets, at the end of the day, the melech's role is distinct from the prophet in that the melech's authority is political. Whereas the prophet, what is the prophet's role?
Spiritual.
That's right, spiritual. Spiritual. And I would say spiritual as opposed to religious. Religious has the connotation of practice, of observance, avodah. So the Beis HaMikdash is more, obviously there's a spiritual component, that's why the Nevi'im are very tied to, and the Ruchnis of the Beis HaMikdash, but religious and ritual and Avoda is more associated with Kohanim, whereas Nevi'im could be anywhere. They could be even far from the Beis HaMikdash. Eliyahu was, Eliyahu HaNavi, Eliyahu HaTishbi, Eliyahu HaGiladi, he was in the north. The Navi's role is purely spiritual. So that's distinction number one, and that is clearly understandable as to why it is that we're going to have ambivalence about a melech. Because the minute that you introduce politics into the world, leadership is fraught with challenges. And there are many, many pitfalls. And as opposed to, as it's, I mean, I guess anything potentially could be misused, but when the Rebbe Shalom tells us, you want to come close to me, you want to lead a good life of spirituality, shake an esrog and a lulav and a hadas and an arava, the Rebbe Shalom kivyachol doesn't have any hesitations. He doesn't have any worries. He doesn't have any drawbacks. Gesundheit. Do it. You'll bring ruchnius into your life. Light Shabbos candles. Put on tefillin. But to institute that one human being should lord over another human being through a political system, through a system of monarchy, that's complicated. And the Ribbono Shel Olam expresses his kivyachol unease about politics, because politics and the monarchy can be dirty and can be nasty and can be unrefined, with this formulation of, if you want a king, we'll make it work. It's a mitzvah, but it's complicated. No, this mitzvah, it's not like eating hamantashen. It's not so simple. Because politics is not simple. Politics, while can be redeemed and it can be elevated and can be noble, it could also be fraught with challenges. And it could be, political maneuvering could be misused, as in these many examples of treaties that were misplaced. As opposed to the Navi, the Dvar Hashem, that institution is, unless its person is a Navi Sheker, is untarnished. A Navi Sheker, that's why it's so interesting. The Navi Sheker is dealt such a severe punishment, a false prophet, because he is damaging a pure and sacred institution. The idea of a Navi, Niv Svasai, means that the prophet speaks the message that that person, he or she, receives from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Well, to misrepresent that, or to falsify that, or to quash that, is extremely damaging. But what is it? It's the word of Hashem. There are no hesitations about that. So, at the end of the day, who is checking whom? The Navi is checking the Melech. Because the spirit must ultimately govern the political reality.
Well, Nathan.
Yes. He, as a spiritual mentor, as a guide, as a Shaliach Hashem, is holding the king accountable. So that's distinction number one. And in that light, we understand why there is ambivalence about the king and why the prophet plays such a crucial role alongside the king. That's number one. Number two is the source of authority and their sphere of influence. What does the king have at his disposal? The king has an army. The king also, as we see, where did the split from the kingdom come from? The kingdom splits over a sensitive issue. What is it?
Who's going to rule?
Another place.
The split is in Shechem, but what is the issue? The issue is taxes. The people come to Rechavam and they said, you know, the taxes are too high. Because the king, part and parcel of having a military is having income. Where does the income come for the government, for the king? From taxes. So that is the crucial point of revolt. Why is that the point for revolt? Because ultimately, the king draws his authority from the people. The people say, what do they say when he antagonizes them by divinely inspired? He listens to the young people, the kids, and he foolishly abandons the old people who told him, go easy on them. So what do? They leave. They just say, you know what? In the end of Perakid Beis, it's Perakid Beis, Pasuk Tezayin. The Jewish people see that the king didn't listen to them. Vayashivu Amas HaMelech Davar Limar. Ma lanu chelik b'David v'lo nachla b'ben Yishai. Lo alecha Yisrael. Go, let's go home. And everybody went home. They just left. And now all of a sudden, there's no king. Because the source of authority of the king is the people, and he exercises that authority through taxation and military might. That's going to be the source of the authority and the exercising of that authority, that sphere of influence. His sphere of influence is going to be limited by the will of the people. If the people ultimately, and that's so much of what goes on, unfortunately, in the northern kingdom, as it becomes more and more unstable, is that, well, there's insurrection for this one, and then this one kills that one, and the other one kills, because there is no broad-based, strong coalition of support for a lot of these kingdoms, and therefore, you know, one person knocks off the next person who knocks off the next person. The source of the authority for the king comes from the people. And therefore, it doesn't have strong stability. It's in human hands. But what do we know? Al tiftechu b'nedivim. When the pasuk says Som tasim alecha melech, put on yourselves a king, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving you a mitzvah, but that mitzvah, it's not on firm footing, because people are fickle and leaders are fickle. So the source of the authority of the king and his sphere of influence are limited. What if the king's military decides they're not going to buy in, right?
He doesn't have the army.
So that's all human institution. As opposed to, what's the source of the Navi's authority?
No, Hashem.
That's right. Only the Borei Olam. He doesn't have a boss, he's not a political appointee. The only person, the only entity, it's not a person. The Navi answers to the Ribono Shel Olam. And so there's an accountability which is purely spiritual in nature, and it's untainted. And so, on the one hand, the source of the authority comes through Ribono Shel Olam, and on the other hand, where is the sphere of influence? It's not that it comes from a group of people, the populace, and it is expressed through a group of people, the military. It comes through the message of Hashem, and the influence is through the speech, the message of the Navi. That's it. The Navi doesn't have an army. He doesn't have a means of coercing. All he has is either his voice, his speech, or his pen, his written word. So that's the second distinction. The first distinction is the role, political or spiritual. The second one is the nature of their authority. Whereas in the king's role, it is the king's source of authority comes from the people and he exercises his influence through people. For the Navi, the authority is bestowed upon the person by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the only influence that that Navi has is, again, through the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
And if they don't want to listen to him, then he's out.
Well, what does it mean he's out? He's just going to... I mean, how did it work to be a Navi in antiquity? You would stand on a street corner and you would tell people prophecy, and if they liked you, they gave you a sandwich, and if they didn't, they would slap you. So Yirmiyahu finds himself many times incarcerated, not in Malachim Aleph, when it gets to Malachim Beis. But there was a story here with Michayu ben Yimla. There's a story in Perek. I mean, forget the Nevi'im in Yud Zayin Yud Ches with Elio, who are being killed, eradicated. But
the king killed them.
Yes.
Yeah.
If you go to Michayu ben Yimla, which is in Perek Chav Beis, so he's a Navi Emes, and Yehoshaphat asks for him to be brought. And when he comes and says, and when he comes, he says the Dvar Hashem. So a false prophet comes, and what does he do? He punches him in the face.
Oh, okay. I remember that.
And so the king says, because he doesn't say what he likes, he puts him in jail. The king says, put him in prison, Michayu ben Yimla. In the end, the king Achav is killed. But the influence of the Navi is the influence of the message, of the moral clarion call. And that's it. And that's why, from a physical standpoint, physically the Navi is weak. But from a moral standpoint, he's very strong. So these two distinctions are related to each other. Political role and political capital are related to spiritual role versus spiritual capital. Spiritual role and spiritual capital, that's what the Navi is banking on. All he has is the message of Hashem, as opposed to the king who has the might of the army. But there is a third distinction, which relates more perhaps to us, and that we can actually internalize a message for thinking about how we develop our own selves. Take a look at this Rambam in source number 4. Sensational Ha'ara. Kol ha'Neviim ein misnavim b'chol eish she'yirtzu. All prophets do not prophesy at any given moment whenever they like. Ella mechavnin daitam. They attune their mind. V'yoshven, and they sit smeichim happy. V'tuve lev, they have to be in a good mood. U'misbodim. And they have to be isolated. Misbodim. She'ein hanevua shor lo mitoch atzvus lo mitoch atzlus al mitoch simcha. And that's why the Rambam says that the Bnei Avnevim had musical instruments to keep them in a good mood. Here's the third difference. The king goes out. Holich lefanecha. He goes out. He leads the people. And he's going out. That's why he has to write a sefer. Mishnah Torah Hazos. Why? Because when he has one Beveis Kanaza, but when he goes out to deal with the affairs on the outside, he needs to take it with him. The king is on the outside. He's navigating, he's negotiating. And that is in contrast to the Navi, who is misbodied, who is alone. The king has many social interactions, but the Navi has only his solitude. The difference is that for the king, while the king can accomplish great things out there in the world, that movement of going out, of seeking, of inquiring, of pursuing, of conquering, of attacking, means that it's not static, it's a dynamic situation. Sometimes he's going to be winning and sometimes he's going to be losing. Sometimes his interactions are going to be positive and sometimes they're going to be negative. There's an up and down. It's like a rutzo v'shov, you could call it. There are high points and then there are disappointments. As opposed to the Navi, he is misbodied. He doesn't interact with other people and he's in a state of joy. You're not going to have nevuah if you're not in a state of actual simcha.
Really?
That's what the Rambam just told us. Smeichem v'tuvei lev. Is that a realistic state to constantly be sameach v'tov lev? The Melech would tell you it's impossible. You can't be living a normal life and just always be on that spiritual and emotional high. But that was the goal of the Navi. The Melech has ups and downs. You can connect this back to the life of Yehuda and the concept of succession. And, you know, who's going to succeed, who's going to fail, getting back up, etc. But the idea is that the Melech is Yotze. He goes out and he interacts with people. Whereas the Navi is secluded. He's misbodied. This is a huge distinction. Because by definition, going out, movement, means that there are going to be peaks and also valleys. As opposed to staying inside means that there's going to be the purity of this spiritual message. That purity is not going to dip. It's not going to step down. If you lose that moment of joy, of gladness, of what the Rambam called tuvei lev, you're not going to be in the level of prophecy anymore, because prophecy requires that static spiritual health. Interesting, right? It's a totally high level. It's not interacting with people. It's being misbodied. These are two tracks. There's the Sefer Melachim and the Sefer Nevi'im. The Melachim HaKadosh Baruch Hu has reservations, because when you're going out, when you're dealing with, when you're conquering, there are crises. On the other hand, the Navi is just always in tune with the Dvar Hashem. And that's why the Navi, when that person is in the status of Nevuah, they are the benchmark of right and wrong. Because they're not dealing with the back and forth, the Ratzo V'Shov, the challenges. What is the ideal in Jewish tradition? Who is the greatest leader of the Jewish people? Moshe Rabbeinu. Why? Because the Rambam says that Moshe Rabbeinu was the Adon HaNevi'im, the unique, sui generis prophet, but he was also, the Gemara says, a Melech. Moshe Rabbeinu was one of a kind. He was able to synthesize the role of the prophet, of being separate from the people, being secluded, misbodin on Har Sinai for 40 days and 40 nights, as a Navi, as the ultimate Navi, but also to play the role of the Melech. Now, as we see over time, that cannot last. It's impossible for one average, ordinary human being to be both the Melech and the Navi. And that's why in our book of Sefer Melachim, you need to have the journey of the kings and also the prophets. We need both. They're not going to be in one personality. But that tells us something about ourselves. We have these qualities. we have the quality of the melech. And recognizing that as a melech, we're out there in the world, we're negotiating, we're navigating, we're interacting, and that means there's going to be a rutz of a shov. It means there are going to be times that we're at the top, that we're winning, and then there are the times we're at the bottom and we're losing, and we're struggling. But we also have, the Gemara says about Jewish people, if they're not Nevi'im, they're B'nai Nevi'im. We're B'nai Nevi'im! We can tap into the koach of smeichim v'tuve leiv, to be misbodied, to go to a quiet place where we come into this space that is untarnished, that is separate from the back and forth of the malchus, to the peace and the serenity and the spiritual perfection of the nevuah that we have within each one of us. We have a sefer malachim for ourselves, and we also have a sefer of nevi'im. We need to know that as malachim, we're trying to navigate the world the best that we can. But also as nevi'im, we have that makom of mispodeid to go to give ourselves the strength and the direction. So we notice three distinctions, to summarize, between the melech and the navi. The melech's role is political, the navi's is spiritual. The source of the authority of the melech and his influence is human versus the Navi, which is purely moral, but also the distinction of the Melech being the person who is on the outside, who is engaging in the world and who is succeeding but struggling. He's Ratz of Ashov, he's going up and down. He is Holech, he's active, versus the Navi who is misbodied, who is secluded. And so each one of us can think about, at what point in our life do we tap in to each one of these models to write our own Sefer Melachim, but also our own Sefer Nevi'im. I'm glad you came today. I hope
we
you.
Are too.
I'm glad we had the opportunity to learn together. So thank you.